Welcome to today's show. I'm Phumi Mashego, and here we are a few days before Women's Day and a few days into Women's Month, and we are 30 years after the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action, and I'm wondering, are things better or worse for women? And more importantly, how does South Africa deal with the woman's place? Well, joining me in studio to grapple with this topic are two very vocal ladies, Ayanda Ali, BOSA member of Gauteng Legislature and social commentator, Ms. Mandisa Mashego. Let's see if they agree. Is South Africa better off for women building the kinds of careers that you have built in the environments that you have built them in? What are some of the, for you, things that have been irritating that you wish other women didn't have to deal with?
Ladies first.
What has been irritating that I wish other ladies didn't have to deal with? I would say having your gender weaponized and used against you. Because we have learned to condition ourselves. We no longer even have to be told where you fit in or where you don't fit in. The fact that we have to second guess ourselves, I feel like is something that I wish other women don't have to go through. Whether you're asking yourself in a room, am I ladylike enough? Am I fluent enough? Am I prepped for this enough?
Do these glasses look all right?
You know, so, and that comes with, you know, years and centuries of being told what it means to be a person to fill that position, right? And now you're trying to take all of your history, your experience, your background, your personality, who you are and what you want, and try to make it fit into this mold. And it doesn't exist anymore, right? Now you can write the rules for yourself. You can go out there and say, this is what it looks like to be a CEO. I come with my femininity. I come with my township culture, Lokshin culture, but I also come with my Model C accent. And I come with the histories and centuries of the pain that my forebears carry, and also the hope and the future of what my children aspire to. So throwing away entirely that box of what you're supposed to be as a politician or what you're supposed to be as someone in corporate is what I wish women today and those who are coming after us won't have to deal with. That you will know that whoever you are, what you carry, your history, your background is enough for any position. There's no longer a rule to say if you're going to be a CEO, you must be white and male, or if you're going to be a politician, you have to be black and male. All of that is cast aside, and I wish those coming after us would know that they're enough and that they are fit for purpose and they're equal to the task just as they are.
Okay. Please repeat the question. It's for the topic. Yeah, it's part of the topic. Has there been an irritation about the expectation of how you show up in the environment that you have been in?
No, not for me.
Or business?
Really? Not for me. I don't. I've always been a tomboy and a bit on the rough side when I was a kid. But that's because in Kulele, you know, emakhaya, where we could jump into the river, go to the mountains every day if you felt like a bit of rabbit or something, or you wanted fish, you know, you'd literally go and fish it, make a fire, they make it. So I grew up, my best friend was a young boy called, well, he's obviously my age now, or maybe a little bit older than me, Fanya, and I haven't seen him since I was a kid in Kulele Mayfen, in a sport. So I've never, and I always, I want to answer this thing in a simplistic way, or converse about it in a simplistic way and not complicated, because there's nothing more boring than these isms, feminism and womanism. I might describe myself as a womanist now and then, but I find it extremely boring. I find this whole, you know, whether you are capitalizing on you being a female to push struggles, extremely divisive and extremely almost backward. I think most of us, and a lot of like my grandmother and all the women like who came before us, who showed us how to be human beings and how to coexist and survive and live and thrive in this world, they never ever had to push, I'm a woman, I'm a woman, I'm this, I'm that, I'm short, I'm tall, I'm black, I'm white. Like it's the most freaking annoying thing on earth. I think I was... I'm very always clear about my position in terms of what I think women should be well, myself as a woman should be, you know, I hate being treated as an affirmative action appointee. I think that might simplify it, for instance, in the professional sense. And there's nothing that irritates me more than walking into a room, you're going to a party or a dinner or whatever, and you find the women huddled up there mm-hmm. and the men huddled up there. I take malobolweni. You know, I think there's a space for the appropriateness of having women be by themselves, and there's a space for men, you know, to do the same when they need to do, obviously, their ultra masculine stuff, and we need to do our ultra feminine stuff, or whatever stuff that is sacred to us as genders. But I think we overemphasize the gender thing to the point, to our own detriment. And for abantu abamnyama, it's actually worse. The detriment is worse because we've become so obsessed now with, you know, putting everybody in a little role and a little box. You know, you're white, you owe everybody. You're Indian, you're this. You're black, you're this. You're colored, you're this, you know. And I think because I grew up between both the, so you know, African and colored world, that irritation for me makes it more starker than somebody who's only grown up as a Phumi Mashego, who has never had to have be forced into a different sort of racial definition. You know what I mean? When you've grown up in South Africa in a multicultural environment under apartheid, you have a much better understanding of why this thing is such an irritation. Human beings must just show up.
Do you think we've regressed? Do you think we've regressed in the world as a whole?
Yes, yes.
The world is the way that it used to be. Now we're these boxes, and we have to have conversations like this. And it's a woman's panel.
No, the world is regressive. Besides having regressed, it's very regressive. We are not the best people we can be as human beings. We're very obsessed with material things, with ego, with money. Doesn't make it unimportant. Of course, it's very important. And as a result, and we are much more divided now. I always make the example of my granny because ngikhuliswe emasimini, literally. And ukulima was the first skill that I had, you know. And I learned to swim in a river, in the Crocodile River, because that's the river that ran through our village. And you didn't learn to swim because you were a girl or a boy, or you were young or you were old. You learned to swim because it's a skill that you needed. You go emasimini from a baby because your granny or your mother carries you on her back as early as a month or 2 months. So you literally ukulele emasimini. And when you get there, all you need are skills to survive. Because now I'm a simula, now I'm full ala, now I'm intabala. What do you think exists there?
I think, yeah, I want to lean in on what you're saying because you're quite right. And for me, I'm of the view that the more things change, the more they stay the same, literally. We're still dealing with issues that your human rights activists were struggling with from the US all over the world, where we're having conversations now whether or not South Africa is ready for a female president. I mean, just preparing for this discussion, that thing bothered me. I said, I mean, what do you mean? Are we ready for a female president? Like, what do you need to be ready for a female president? Like, it's not like you're being, you know, asked, are you ready for the pandemic? Are you ready for a wedding? Are you ready for a funeral where things have to be done for a country to be at a place where they're ready? It should be a simple thing. Is there a candidate? Yes, there's a candidate. Are they perfectly suited? Yes, there you go. Similar to your example of saying you learn how to swim because you need to learn how to swim, not because you're a woman or you're a man. And you need to do what needs to be done. But if we're still in this day and age having conversations about whether or not a country is ready, what do you need to prepare for a female president? Like, what is it that a female president would bring that needs to be so prepared for? So I want to agree to say we think we have advanced and we think that we have gained so many strides because we have legislation, or maybe we have representation in parliament and the legislatures, and therefore we think, oh no, we have overcome certain barriers. We still have a lot of work to be done in order for us to see women as human beings. Women are people.
We live in a country that, according to world standards, right, we're very close to all of the benchmarks, the parity, the representation in parliament, all of those things, and we have affirmative action and women's empowerment, and yet we also live in a country that is extremely dangerous to be a woman, to be a girl. So what are we getting wrong in your view? What is, you know, is the legislature and the policies that we have so richly, have they outpaced the communities that we live in?
Yeah, I think for me, socialization is a big problem. It comes back to seeing women as human beings, first and foremost, so that you can treat them as you should, as you would any other human being, with the rights and with the responsibilities that would be fit for any other woman. As long as we're still seeing women as children, or we're still seeing women as these dainty little fragile things that cannot think for themselves, that cannot aspire, that cannot even be villains, you know? You know, sometimes when there's a leader who's a woman who's done something wrong, and the society will automatically say, but she's a woman, how can she do this? She's a human being. So she has the potential to be a villain just like any man would. And I think as soon as we start seeing women as equal to any man in terms of value, in terms of their contribution, in terms of their aspirations, we're still going to struggle. Because now we're seeing women as possessions. We're seeing women as a special category of people that is just maybe above children. And I think for me, that's where the problem is. Socialization is where it begins.
So what are we getting right? What are we getting right? So we've spoken about some of the things that are not quite working and some of the things that are irritations. Are we getting anything right in our society?
No, because we're separatist. Society is extremely separatist and it's very boring, you know. We need to be functional. Indigenous people were functional, you know. You know what thing is seen to, ne? Every household would have to have similar sets of skills, because even though there were areas where we would live closer to each other in a sort of what did they call it, sort of like a spy school, right? But you know that indigenously we settle very independently of each other, with big distances between each other. If you go to not a peri-urban area, you know the difference between a rural area and a peri-urban area. If you go to a purely rural setting, say in KZN, Eastern Cape, right, where people are still settled, there are very few communities that are still like that. I know a few in KZN, indigenous communities that settled the way we used to. We were not close to each other physically because we are balls of energy, siya dinana. There's nothing worse than constantly being around people. It's like the worst thing. You can be constantly around your little community, your little family, because we also lived in those relatively separated spaces, but within our sort of extended family networks. If kunes tembu, or you know, there'll always be a granny, a great grand, an aunt, etc. And then as the children grow up and become adults and marry and start families, obviously they then move out when it becomes too packed. Okay. Or people, I suppose, you know, Gashonwa life continues. So the reality is that the closer, the more we closed the physical distance between our living spaces, the more separated we became, which is a complete irony. Because when we lived with enough space, which is what we need around ourselves, I mean, go to any wild environment.
Have a lokshini.
So even a townhouse complex, even here, it doesn't matter even if you're in Sandton.
Yeah.
The houses might be bigger, the plots and the yard might be bigger, but you still need namatelene. Human beings are not supposed to live that way because it's definitely going to cause conflict. We need our privacy. We need our own sort of family traditions and cultural things that we do in our own private spaces. We need to be in a sort of a meditative state most of the time so that we present and bring our best in every situation. You can't bring your best in a situation when you're constantly dealing with energies. So I was making the point about the fact that ngesintu, or indigenously, not just ngesintu, because I think also this obsession and with being African is a bit annoying. You know, all indigenous communities are the same wherever you went in the world, you know, pre the Industrial Revolution. Every family had to have healers that could heal psychological conditions, physical ailments, mental, spiritual ailments, right? That's just on the health side. Every family had to have abalimayo so that you have food. Every family had to have people who could make fabrics and textiles so that you have blankets and clothes and whatever else you need, right? Every family had to have people who were carpenters, called trades. Mm-hmm. My father went to school at a wonderful Catholic school called St. Francis College in Marion Hill. I went to Little Flower at Globe. Mm-hmm. I know the Catholic in me comes out, mm-hmm. the Catholic girl in me comes mm-hmm. out quite often. But the reason I mentioned my father's school, besides the fact that he just recently passed away, is that it was, I think the school was established in the late 1800s. It was one, and my dad went there probably, if he was born 1929, he would have gone there in the 1930s, right? Because they started school earlier. They started learning trades earlier. When they were in school, the curriculum, which was a British Latin curriculum, you had to learn your academic subjects and you had to have compulsory three trades, which you started learning from grade one or R. At that level, right? So you see a lot of these videos of the Chinese, it's that sort of curriculum.
So your model. View is that because our trades have become so segmented, it's part of the reason why
because human beings are no longer treating themselves as functional, you know, assets on this world. We all should be functional. We all should have something that we can do that gives us added value and self-esteem. Mm. And worth, and something that we can trade with, and something that can add value to our environment. No one should ever depend on anybody else except a little baby and a very old person and a disabled person. That's it. There should be no. And this is why
you raise an interesting thing about that human beings rub each other off the wrong way. See, at dinana, which. I think is
our
very
energies
often,
are not our energies are not good for which us is to very be in close often proximity.
The a reason that is given for why it's difficult for women to climb a corporate ladder, why it's difficult for women to succeed, is that women become bitches to each other. They don't work.
I actually want to lean in
because all human beings have intuition.
I want to lean into your point about the different traits per family and the value that every person is supposed to bring and contribute in their community. Because I'm of the view that there's something there. You know, even at the time that you described, the role of women was valued. You know, the matriarch in the family was known and seen as such.
This is exactly the problem.
Right?
This is the problem.
And so I think today there's no longer that.
We need to move on
from
that.
Yeah.
Because why emphasize the value of women?
I want to, because I'm saying it.
Every human being
has value. Absolutely. So absolutely.
Let me tell you, I'm a daddy's girl.
Yeah.
I'm a daddy's girl,
yeah.
Through and through. I actually border on the, you know, biasness towards men more than women if I have to pick a side, okay? I was trying to tell you something. Mm. I was trying to come somewhere when I was telling you about how I was raised.
Mm. Yeah, but I
and it just, was
and to the, I actually wanted to make the point that she's making now because
I just,
you're
I
right.
just want us to I just want us to have an understanding that at some point we need to stop the toxicity. As women
agreed.
We need to stop the victimhood. The way black people need to stop being victims perpetually.
No, 100%.
Black women need
no, 100%.
To stop
being victims. And I actually wanted to lean to your point to say that because that
be
was valued, it was valued back then. But now it seems that the role is not valued anymore. The role of caregiving or the role of being able to provide for the home or
uglima
or takes.
A man
I agree
caregive.
Fully.
Sometimes
I agree
men are
fully.
Better caregivers than women.
100%.
I don't want to be personal.
100%.
But I have experiences.
100%.
Where I can relate better to my grandfather, my father, ubabumncane, my uncle, my male cousins. In fact, I can speak in my family. I'm with the guys all the time. And that does not make me anti-women. This is why when people want definitions, because this is what the world likes. You like little boxes and doors, and let's open this door. It's comfortable. I'm a womanist. I describe myself as a womanist because I cannot remove my African roots from who I am. I cannot remove the fact that I am a woman. And I cannot remove the fact that all of us are here today as a result of pre-existence of others who came before us.
What's the difference between feminist and womanist, if
inherit,
you can educate us?
We inherit the lessons learned and the traumas from the previous generation. Every generation has to do that. And what makes one generation better than the other is how well poised and positioned it is to be able to overcome.
Do you want to
the traumas extrapolate of the previous generation,
the difference between the feminist and the womanist.
So I don't, you see, and this is the thing, I don't want to get caught in this thing, because this is when your guys were calling me, I said to them, I don't want a title. I hate titles. I don't operate with titles. I'm probably on my fourth career in my life. I was not raised in, you know, maybe it's because I did maths and science in school. That was compulsory for me. I don't know. Maybe my brain works extra fast. I don't know what it is. I do get bored very quickly, and I don't have patience for. I once received a reference from one of my holiday jobs when I was a school kid, and I needed a reference because now I'm off, you know, after matric, I needed to get another job because I couldn't afford varsity. And I go to my ex-boss and he gives me a letter. And then at the end, he puts, she doesn't suffer fools easily. I'm like, you need to take this out. Who's going to hire me? Who's going to give me a job? You put this kind of crap in here. And he was like, no. They need to know exactly what they're dealing with.
But you're the one that said you feel you're a womanist more than
I was saying, because so people like labels.
For a person who doesn't know
I was saying, because people
is.
Like labels. You for can a person put the womanist who doesn't label. Know,
what is
a
the,
womanist is a human being who knows one, that they are a female, because they are a female. They are a woman. They're not a man. Okay? It's just a physical distinction and a functional distinction that you can give birth, you can carry a baby, and you can breastfeed, blah, blah, blah. It's a functional difference, yeah? But a womanist is a woman who fully is aware that she is a woman and she exists in the body of a woman, but more particularly, a woman who comes from a certain geographic space that has very particular traumas with it. For instance, the previously colonized areas of the world. So Africa, America, Australia, New Zealand, India, China, parts of China, Hong Kong, your Korea areas.
And what's the difference between that and being a feminist?
So I'm coming to that. I always explain it in detail because when I explain it quickly, people don't get it. So you accept that you're a woman, you accept that you come from a certain historical context with its own, not just colonial character, but it's got other things as well, or, you know, indigenous character, including the colonization. And therefore, right, and that's very important, and therefore, because you are this particular woman with this particular definition, which doesn't necessarily limit you to this definition and the scope, but this is who you are, and you acknowledge everything that comes with this, you then have peculiar challenges, right? At any given point, whatever generation you come from, you have certain challenges that will differ from, say, a European woman. Right, who might also be a feminist because they also come from their context, their own challenges, their own tribe. In fact, tribalism actually originated in Europe, yeah? And tribal clashes and all of that is actually a European thing. It's not, it doesn't belong to any of the global south regions that were colonized through various forms of colonization, because often we obsess about the colonization of the last 500 years. When the oldest colonization is the Roman one, followed by the Arabic one, right? Or it's the Arabic one and then the Roman.
No, can I cut you off there and say, given this context of feminism, womanism, and a new way of seeing who we all are as individuals, do you think that it is harder or easier to succeed in politics as a woman?
I actually wanted to also lean in on the definition, and this is why I asked, what's the difference between a womanist and a feminist? Because in our earlier conversation, we were talking about how, oh no, this is victimhood, we should leave that behind, etc. But the very definition that has been given on what womanist is takes into consideration the years of colonialism, takes into consideration the peculiar challenges that a woman who identifies as womanist would then face. And so to say, let's do away with that completely and not talk about race, let's not talk about gender, that is divisive and it doesn't fit the conversation. is, I think it defeats the purpose of what we had then discussed, to say women are still on the back foot and things need to be done in order for us to have an equal footing with men, and value needs to be given to the contribution of every person, male, woman, boy, girl, whatever, you know, individual that exists. And so for me, I think then the conversation needs to begin at a point where, are we saying that we still believe that women are being oppressed? Do we still believe that women are being suppressed? Do we still believe that women are not being given a fair deal in the social settings that they exist in, whether it's at work, whether it's at home, whether it's in the streets? And I think once we have that premise, then we can then launch from then to say, are we still saying women are being oppressed, women are being suppressed, and that women are not treated as equal to men in the various settings? If the answer is yes, then the conversation takes on a completely different turn to say, what do we do to fix it? Where do we go to address those concerns? If we're saying, no, everything is fine now, and let's do away with titles, let's do away with wanting to fight for women's rights and gender parity and the like, then we then take a turn to say, oh, okay, let's celebrate the gains and everything is fine now. What do we then need to do in order to advance various other causes that might still be a societal challenge? I think that point is what we need to agree on in these conversations. Are we saying women are fully emancipated? We're on par with our male counterparts. There's no issue there. Let's fight a new battle. And maybe the battle is, you know, on different fronts. If we're saying no, work still needs to be done, let's start from that premise to say, what kind of work needs to be done? What are the reasons for us not having advanced as much as we should have years after, you know, feminism or womanism began? I think for me, that's what I'm grappling with in this conversation at the moment. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Do you think it's become harder or easier?
What?
To be a woman in any space?
No, I mean, come on, guys. I don't get it. When you're born, you're going to have to live your life, right or wrong. As soon as you're born, you're just going to have to live your life. We put too much emphasis on things that we're just supposed to do. We call things struggles. They're not struggles. It's life. In life, you need skills in order to be able to fend for yourself, because you're not it's got fur, it doesn't need clothes. Do you know what I mean? You need clothes. Every living thing, even a mosquito, needs to eat, right? You need to exercise your brain, because the reason we have the fastest brain in the animal kingdom is so that we can use it, because it's a use it or lose it thing. You know, if you buy a computer and you don't switch it on for a year, you might as well throw it away. It's never going to work. So your brain is exactly the same. If you don't feed it, it's going to stop working. So this thing about, so you can have a definition. There's nothing wrong, because defining something shows that you have a perspective on what is going on, who are you in the greater scheme of things, what should you be doing, what is your responsibility, your role in society, et cetera, et cetera. And whatever context you need, you can take it back 5,000 years, like I said. There isn't like, you know, the colonization. There's various forms of colonization, you know, done by different groupings of nations and groupings of individuals, et cetera. And so you define yourself as a feminist if you want to. There's nothing wrong with that. We shouldn't be. I'm not judging people. I'm just saying, if you want to put a label on me, that's fine. I'll accept the womanist label. I introduced it, by and large, on a popular scale to South Africa. It was kind of like one of those low key things. And the reason I introduced it was precisely because I wanted to move away from this campaign focused obsession with feminism. Because it's, when people complain that it's toxic, I agree with them. It becomes emotional blackmail. It's the same as the gay world, or is it LGBTQI world? It becomes very manipulative and abusive. Then I must start a group for short people. Do you know what I mean? Then we must have our peculiar form of discrimination that everybody must obsess about. I'm short. And I need to have two-step ladders in my house. Unlike a normal person who can reach to the top of their cupboard, I need a three-level step ladder, and I need a five-level step ladder. So that nonsense must just come to an end. We are here to live this life. It comes with challenges. It has pre-birth traumas that we inherited through our DNA and through societal interaction. We must deal with it. Stop complaining and moaning. Let's focus on our functional purpose. Why am I here? And I emphasize functional because we've got many reasons why we're here. There's spiritual reasons why we're here. There's other reasons we don't know what happens when somebody dies. What happened before I was born? Why was I even born, right? So if we can start focusing, it will remove all these isms. It will remove the obsession with racism. It will remove the obsession with, oh, but men had... Listen, I'm never going to be working at a construction site. Okay? Even though I wanted to be an engineer, I wanted to be a chemical engineer because that wouldn't require me to be climbing mountains and 50-story building. Men must go and do that because they are functionally made for that. But does that mean that a woman can't work at a construction site if she wanted to? Of course not. That's exactly the point I was making earlier.
I think that is a great place to end, because I think you're both agreeing from different directions, right? Is you're talking about functionality and you're talking about an understanding of where we are and working from there to say what still needs to be done, what still needs to be moved on from. And I think always when I have women's conversations, when I have conversations about opportunity and parity, this is always the circle.
What is this?
That
is
we all come back to.
Opportunity and parity, a new buzz phrase now?
Maybe for you today in this conversation.
No, I just mean,
because,
literally, like, is it like a new thing now? Like it's an extension of affirmative action?
No, I'm quite serious to say maybe it is. Maybe it is the new. The new thing.
Opportunity and parity, I must remember it.
The new thing that is the distraction for the functions that we need to fulfill, for the value that women bring into the community, and whether it is valued and seen and appreciated for what it
is. Look, can I say this before you close? I want to give you a real-life example or something that will demonstrate what I'm saying. If there's a study that was done by, and you don't really need to do a study, you can literally do like ballpark yourself, all of us can. If you look at the Indian community, the colored community, and the, which I partly
in
come
South
from,
Africa.
The colored community.
In South Africa.
These are the only racial classifications that exist in this country. Mm-hmm. Colored Indian white.
Okay.
If you look at the colored Indian white communities, and you look at a very simplistic thing, don't take it too far. It doesn't mean more than what I'm saying.
Indian and white.
Very simplistic thing. I'm going to come to the African demographic. And you look at the what do they call it? The prevalence of sustained marital status, of married, and I'm talking married in the traditional sense. I don't entertain the other forms, between a man and a woman. That's for me marriage. The others, I do not subscribe to at all. If you look at families that are, let's also say maybe there's no marriage, but there's a man and a woman who have a family and they have been raising that family. They've been raising that family, right? Mm-hmm. For however long, for a sustained period. The percentage of that prevalence in the white communities is in the Indian communities 86%.
In the white and Indian?
In Indian.
Okay.
It's 86%.
Okay.
In the Caucasian community, it's 82%. In the colored community, it's 56% somewhere there. What is it in the African communities? On average, according to the study. You can go to StatsSA if you want to and start there. You can go to another research group called, is it Analytico or something like that? I can't remember. What do you think it is in the black, in the African community, in our, I'm part African, so. What do you think it is?
You
give
have
me an estimation.
You have to say, because
but
we've
I want
run
somebody
out of time.
To guess it. I want the guys to guess it. Please guess it for me. It's 30%. But there's a debate between, some say it's lower than 30, some say it's a little bit higher than 30. But the bottom line is, so that numbers don't lie. Okay, that's one. I'm not used to podcasts limiting me, so you'll forgive me. I like to have quality conversations. I don't like
it's
to
fine.
Have a conversation
but,
to take
but
a box.
We have to let her go. So you can
she's,
carry
she's
on talking.
Said,
I'm gonna, I wanted to hear the thought.
Send a message to those guys and tell them she's a running late.
I actually wanted to say, on the point of functionality, I want to agree fully and wholeheartedly. My only premise is that people should be allowed space to be able to decide what it is that they want to contribute and how it is that they want to actualize and how it is that they want to fulfill their God-given purpose and destiny. And what's between their legs should not be a determinant to say, yes, you can pursue your functionality in this way or that. So being a woman should not come with those kind of limitations. And I'm of the view that one should be able to pursue their heart's desire, regardless of whether they're a man or a woman. And being a woman should not be a disqualifier for me to be on that skyscraper if I want to. I share that with you, by the way. I do not want to be on anything scaffolded or anything high. But if I then decided that that's my goal, that's my purpose, my dream, my destiny, I ought to be given permission. Is the wrong word. I ought to just be allowed
but
to be.
But you are allowed. You see,
not always. Not always. And the reason why I'm going to leave. The reason why I'm saying allowed is not the right word, because no one should have to ask for that permission. But structurally, you are discouraged and dissuaded on a number of fronts. I'm going to leave the professional aside. I'm going to leave that aside in that people would not want to hire a woman for that job because of various things. What will happen when it's her period? What if she wants to give birth and have children? She's going to mess up with my project because there are all these issues that come
but
with
the
being
Lord
a caregiver.
Doesn't even allow that.
So I agree. But I'm going to speak about structurally and leave that outside. Then I'm going to speak about the household, where you will be given a glass ceiling even within the home. And the woman can only be as successful as her man is liberal. So if you have a conservative husband in the household who will then tell you what you can and cannot do and will limit you, perhaps not even outrightly, but through the responsibilities that you are supposed to fulfill. No, my mother-in-law is sick. What are you doing on a scaffold to go and look after the mom? Even though, as you had mentioned, some of the men might be better suited to be caregivers in that role. Or no, the child is sick and this and that and the next, and then you, because you are the woman, are supposed to deal with that. So your own aspirations of your functionality and what you can achieve are limited, not only structurally because you may not be hired for it, or perhaps you may not receive the amount of money as your male counterparts, but even in the home and even in society. You will go up that scaffold and whoever is walking past will be seeing you from the bottom looking up, baby, how mutles, how ini. So all of those dynamics conspire against the woman being that which she was called and created to be and walking in her functionality and what she's able to achieve. So I think I'm of the view that while strides have been made, we cannot lie and say, oh no, nothing has been done. Our laws in this country, international laws, and a number of other legislation has come together to sort of support the woman. But we're not seeing the tangible change on the ground as yet, and as much as we ought to have in this day and age. And I think that for me is a conversation that we ought to have, to say what then needs to be done, what more needs to be done in order for us to really say we can freely self-actualize as women on par with our male counterparts. I think that for me, is where I'd like to leave it. Thank you. Okay.